Good evening and welcome again to another episode of the iPhone Podcast. This is episode 16, brought to you by Blue Microphones. I'm your host, Gary Ying, tonight alongside Justin Louie. Justin, buddy, how's it going?
Very good. I'm excited for another episode. We're back on track, which is nice, and let's get going.
All right, let's take a rundown some of the interesting stories that we've come across. This one here, China. Beijing Apple Store was closed due to scalpers reselling the iPhone 4. Now, we know that Apple has set a limit on iPhone purchases per person. That's two phones per person. What happened here was, for some unknown reason, this Apple Store in Beijing, they lifted the limit from two to unlimited, and that ended up closing the store, which I found was hilarious.
Yeah, I think what was interesting about this story is Apple either did it for one of two reasons. Either they had a ton of stock there and they were worried about the interest level because of the price in China, or they just decided, hey, let's run this for a couple days, all hell will break loose, and then for the rest of time, when anybody complains about our two per person limit, we'll be able to point to this event. Because I know a lot of people here in Canada and the US have complained in the past about the two per account limit, especially people who have more than that in their family. But again, this kind of proves maybe the two limit is a little tight, but having unlimited doesn't work, because as that those pictures and videos showed, there were people walking in and buying 30 of them and then going out to the line and then selling them. So that doesn't work either. So that was what was interesting about the story for me.
Yeah, especially in, you know, a highly populated place like China, where sometimes, you know, when people want something, it can lead to a free-for-all. So, I mean, having the two-person per limit just makes sense. I mean, there are lots of people out there who want the phone, but they can't get it. Just take a look at, you know, Canada. A lot of people still want the iPhone 4, but stocks are still very, very low.
Yeah, it's still tough here, and hopefully that changes over the next few weeks, because it's got a little better in the U.S. over the last couple of weeks, so hopefully more stock is going to start making its way to Canada.
Next up, we have a story here. Verizon, they basically said that an iPhone announcement would not come from them, it would come from Apple. This is when one of the Verizon reps were asked about to comment on a Wall Street Journal article that Apple was building a Verizon-compatible iPhone. Now, this person mentioned that, I can't give you any insights, but I think Apple's the one that has to make that announcement. But as we've realized as of, I believe it was yesterday, the Wall Street Journal actually came out with an updated article, a new article. Basically, it talked about the CDMA Verizon iPhone, and then that article ended up getting revised to confirm that there would be a CDMA Verizon iPhone, and AT&T's exclusive sale of the iPhone would end in the United States.
Yeah, this is episode 16. I'm pretty positive we haven't had a single episode where we haven't mentioned a Verizon iPhone rumor. We're not just making these stories up. It's news every single week. So again, as I've said 100 times before, I think we're going to keep discussing this until it actually happens. But this one's at least a little different spin, because I like what that Verizon guy said a couple weeks ago when they commented on it. They basically said, no, nothing was on the horizon. Now to say, hey, if there was something to announce, I think that would come from Apple, at least tells me that that guy thinks, and he works for Verizon, that there is something in the pipeline, and he's not going to make the mistake that other people have done in the past and announce something before Apple was ready. So these, all the rumors adding up, it sounds like maybe there's some legs to this one, and maybe early in the new year they will finally have an iPhone in the U.S. on a carrier besides AT&T, which is great for the people and for Apple, because their sales have to start to be limited by the fact they can only deal with AT&T. They've seen their sales increase tenfold in all these other countries as new carriers have gone on board, so it's only a matter of time.
Yeah, now the interesting thing about this article is that it comes from the journalist Yukari Iwatani Kane, and she seems to always have these specific Apple scoops. So, I mean, any sort of Apple quote-unquote leak coming from her, you know, you're going to know that it's coming from a very close Apple source. Part of the article also stated that there's going to be a new redesign for the iPhone 5 or the next iPhone that's coming next year. So far, we've had a new iPhone released every year. From the iPhone 3G to the 3GS, cosmetically, there were no changes. The iPhone 4 is the biggest redesign since the move from the first gen to the iPhone 3G. So, I mean, with AntennaGate giving Apple a lot of negative press, it'll be interesting to see how they'll change the phone this time around next summer.
Yeah, you're right. That's kind of the part that was buried in that story. You're right about Wall Street Journal. Many people believe that they've become almost a PR firm for Apple, and Apple uses them to kind of gauge interest and build interest. They've been right on a lot of things. As far as the redesign of the phone goes, I have mixed feelings about that, because you're right, because of the antenna gate, because of the glass on both sides and some people having issues with that, I could see them doing a redesign, especially if they don't feel like the antenna on the outside is right ready to go yet because of this problem. But on the other hand, I really like the current design. I liked it from the beginning, but now that I'm several months into using it, when I borrow somebody's or somebody hands me their 3G to do something or try something, it seems like such a cheap kind of plasticky phone. I love the new design, so it'll be interesting to see what they come up with.
Yeah, that just shows how spoiled iPhone users are now. Using an iPhone 3G is now painful, whereas before, you know, just using the first gen iPhone was a treat. But anyways, moving on. Next story here, one of Justin's favorite actors, Tony Curtis, passed away, and he was buried with his iPhone. Other possessions was his Stetson hat and an Armani scarf, driving gloves, and a copy of his favorite novel, and by his side, an iPhone.
I love this story because it just shows how crazy people are about their iPhones. It's pretty interesting that you wouldn't really expect, and I know this is a little bit of a stereotype and probably isn't fair, but you don't expect that many 85-year-olds to be running around with iPhones, but I'd probably like to be buried with mine, so I'm pretty passionate about it, and so it was a neat story. That's why I threw it in there.
Right. I'm sure they sort of strategically placed it so he's holding it the right way or in a different way. Okay, that's a bad joke.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
Sorry. Rest in peace, Tony. I'm sure his daughter, Jamie Lee, hopefully she's doing a bit better.
You weren't the first person to have an inappropriate joke. There were several jokes about he certainly isn't getting any AT&T signal down there.
6 feet under. Apple released a new commercial for the iPhone 4. This one targets the Retina display, saying it's the highest resolution display ever made. It sure does make the phone look really good. Most of the Apple ads, they've been planned perfectly to draw you in. One interesting part about that ad was how, which site talked about it, 9 to 5 Mac, and I believe Rene Ritchie from tipbee.com, they were mentioning how Apple had their own Twitter army that's been fully developed. Some of the names in the commercial, you can actually see them on Twitter, and they're just a bunch of fictional people that talk to each other, and they're quote-unquote real.
Yeah, the reason I put the story in and I thought it was interesting is Apple has never made that big a deal about the Retina display. If you go all the way back to the keynote and then the first batch of commercials and even their website, the Retina display has never kind of really been the focal point for them. It's been more about the redesign and the FaceTime and several other features, but any blog or any review or all the hype early on, it was always people talking about the screen. So it almost seems like Apple, for the first time, has kind of had their playbook taken away from them and they realized, hey, we didn't make that big a deal about the screen, but it seems to be the thing that everybody's attracted to, so we better start promoting that. That's what I thought was interesting about it. And I've always said the biggest improvement of the new phone is definitely the screen. The speed improvements and the call quality and the how well iOS 4 with the backgrounding and all that works, all those are great. But the screen is the thing that you look at it and you never get sick of seeing it when you watch a video or read text. Like, I read so much more on my iPhone now because the text is just so crisp and so easy to read.
Yeah, this is part of, you know, Apple's decision to sort of under-promise and over-deliver and sort of let the product speak for itself. I mean, the screen is amazing. They don't really emphasize the camera as much, but, I mean, the camera is able to take phenomenal pictures in low light and not have any sort of fuzziness. I mean, the sensor just picks up so much light, even when you're in, you know, even if you're lit by candlelight, the shutter just fires instantaneously. So that's one of my favorite features as well.
Yeah, the camera's phenomenal, and I've gone from somebody who had almost no interest in photography, and it was mostly just because I wasn't into it enough to ever spend the money to get a camera, and then you had to download it and do things. Now it's always with you. It has incredible shots. I'm not saying it compares to professional, but I mean, it blows away even, like, if you went, say, a couple years ago, and if I have friends who went out and bought like $500 point and shoot cameras a couple years ago, the iPhone has already surpassed that. And then to have all these great apps where with a couple clicks of a button, you can crop them, you can make simple changes to the color balance or effects, and then another click, you're right on Flickr or Twitter. It's really made photography something very easy for anyone to do, have very credible results, and then quickly share your work. It's great.
Yeah, a lot of those apps now, I mean, it's so easy to add these effects, where previously it was limited to users who could master Photoshop or, you know how to use an app like Picasa. But now you can just, you know, make all these edits straight on the phone, one touch, upload to Facebook or Twitter or whatever. It's just so easy. I mean, before it was a bit of a pain. So, but I mean, for instant photography, it's the way to go.
It's getting to the point for me anyways, that I do a lot of blogging and a lot of stuff online and even a lot of web design. That's what I do for work. And I'm getting to the point where there's stuff that I actually prefer to do on my iPhone. Like, there are certain things where I'll go to Google Images and grab an image and crop it, and I actually find the tools on my iPhone are faster and easier to use than the ones on my Mac. So to be at that point already is pretty amazing, and I can't wait to just see what keeps happening with the iPhone and the iPad, and it's all moving to this. I could see I don't think there's always those rumors that Apple is going to get rid of OS X and go strictly to iOS. I don't think we're quite there yet, but I think you're going to see more and more of these features built into the operating system, because, like I said, the interface and the ease of use on the iPhone is actually starting to make some of the stuff on the computer seem a little dated.
Right. Next story here. This is an article from a Wall Street analyst. He's mentioning how Apple's developing possibly new iPhones with larger and smaller screens. These could be offered as early as 2011. Now, we know that Apple typically releases their iPhone refresh in the summer. They would definitely have to break out of their cycle to release something early in the spring. But, I mean, it'd be interesting to see if there would be an iPhone with a larger screen, but the way I see it is right now, this screen size, and it seems to work with all the apps and everything. I mean, to introduce two different iPhones with different screens, developers would have a lot of work on their hands to once again port their apps to certain displays, different size displays rather.
Yeah, it's interesting. These rumors don't seem to be going away, so that sometimes leads you to believe that there may be something to them. But, I mean, there's been lots of other Apple rumors in the past that went on and were never made to come true. This goes against everything we know about Apple. They don't like to have a million different products out there. They don't want to have developers. They've already had developers having to develop for a couple different things. So you're right. I don't necessarily believe these rumors, but I thought the interesting thing and the reason I put it in was just to kind of gauge what you thought of, do you think there's a need for that? I personally don't. I think the iPhone works great for what it does. I don't ever feel the need, especially with, like I said, the Retina display. I find reading and manipulating photos and even doing some basic blogging now, it's a nice size. And then if you want to go up to that next size, I think the iPad's then the next step. I don't see why we need that 7-inch thing in the middle. There's these rumors of either the iPhone getting bigger or the smaller version of the iPad. I think they kind of have the sweet spot now, in my opinion, but I'm interested to see. I guess the market will play that out because several of the other tablets coming out are 7-inch. So I guess if Apple sees a lot of those selling really well and people do want something a little smaller than the iPad, then I'm sure they'll do it. But I don't necessarily think that's going to come anytime soon. I think they kind of got the two perfect sizes right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think right now it's more about having products that are perfected, that work really well, as opposed to the Dell model, where you just unleash a whole bunch of products and see what ones people will want to buy. It's more about quality more than quantity, and that has led to Apple's success. They've decreased the number of products in their lineup, and they've done them really well.
Agreed.
Next one here, we have an iPad story. We haven't had many iPad stories lately, but according to some analyst, Bernstein, they're talking about how the iPad's current sales rate is working out to be about 4.5 million units per quarter, which definitely tops the 1 million per quarter of the original iPhone at launch, and the 350,000 units per quarter when DVD players were first launched. If this rate persists, the iPad could become a $9 billion per year business, just blowing past game consoles and everything to become the fourth largest consumer electronics category. The iPad is huge. I think people are underestimating the power of the iPad. Part of the iPad's success is that it's so simple to use. And not only that, developers have quickly jumped on to the iPad. I mean, I've seen some phenomenal apps. The last app that I saw was one that was a teleprompter. So for people who were doing presentations to audiences, they could use their iPad as a full-out teleprompter, which I thought was really, really cool.
Yeah, not to pat ourselves on the back, but if you go back, or if you've been listening the whole time, you and I were both very high on the iPad, even on that first day when it was announced, when it was originally met with some skepticism. We both kind of felt that even if it was just a giant iPhone and nothing more, that's a pretty compelling product. And I know I said right from the beginning, iPad from day one was an amazing product because of the iOS operating system and just having more real estate. It was going to be great from the beginning. But I told everybody that once developers had a chance to really see how this thing works, you're just going to keep seeing better and better apps. And now in a month or two, whenever they release the new version of iOS 4 for backgrounding and the different things to bring them up to speed, the iPad is going to be an incredible device. So again, I'm not surprised by the success. It's kind of interesting comparing it to DVD because DVD was such a giant success when it first came out. So again, you can't really compare them. They're very different products. But for something, I mean, you think DVD would be a much more popular thing. It was replacing home video, VHS, which was huge at the time. So that seemed like a more natural thing than the tablet, which had never had success. So for Apple to be matching this kind of success is pretty unbelievable, considering that most people were saying, hey, this is a market that doesn't even exist and people don't really need this thing. It's done phenomenal.
Yeah, I found it weird to compare it to DVD players. I mean, during the time when people were buying DVD players, I think it's totally different from what people were wanting to buy nowadays in terms of tablets and a DVD player. I just don't think they can compare. But
It is a bad comparison. They're only comparing it because it was formerly considered to be sort of the fastest growing consumer device. And DVD, what people don't remember is it didn't kind of come out of the gates really strong. It's when the titles really got better and the prices came down, then it really became a phenomenon there for a few years, and now it's on its way out because of moving to a more digital format.
Yeah, I don't even remember the last time we used our DVD player. It's so interesting how fast things are changing and technology is evolving when it comes to digital media. It's unreal.
Yeah.
But moving on, this is a pretty neat app that's coming your way. It's the Capcom Arcade app. Essentially, this is going to be a free Capcom Arcade app. What you'll do is you'll download it, and the app will come with a few tokens that you can use to play games a few times for free. Once you run out of tokens, you get more, more tokens. It's like being in an actual arcade. Hopefully this model is they're hoping that people will want to play the game more, so they'll buy more tokens to play the game. Now, you mentioned before that this is a really interesting model. Now that I'm thinking more about it, this might bring back the arcade nostalgia for people who have never been to an arcade, you know, to exchange your quarters for tokens or to buy more quarters to play games. But at the same time, I also feel that users nowadays, they just don't have the patience to pay to play when they feel they can just go, you know, download a free app and just play with that instead. So it'll be interesting to see how it works out. But I mean, some of those Capcom arcade classics are pretty awesome, I must say, for people who grew up playing them.
Yeah, I love this story for two reasons. Because A, I am a huge Capcom fan. Street Fighter and Super Street Fighter and all the different versions. And 1942, those are two of my all-time favorite games. I've spent hundreds of hours on both those games, especially Street Fighter. I just love it. So any new version of that is exciting for me. But the thing I like is just the creativity of Capcom to try something new. I don't think that really people, it's going to change the model in the sense that all of a sudden now every game is going to take some token and you're going to be going into the app store to buy tokens. But I like the idea of, here's this game anybody can download. They give you two or three tokens a day or whatever the article says. So you play two or three games, you die, you're done. Then you're faced to either unlock the game and pay for it like you would any other game, or you can wait till the next day to get more tokens. I think there are people who obviously will just buy it, the novelty will wear off, and they'll unlock the game because they like it. But then I could see there being people who, again, just kind of play a couple times every week, and then they have plenty of tokens just to try it. And again, they may like it, and then down the road buy it or tell a friend. It's just a thinking out of the box. I like to see any company who's thinking of different ways to try to sell. We're constantly bombarded with the idea that, hey, everybody today just wants things for free or to steal it, and that hasn't been the case. You can you make a great product, and you can find a way to monetize it, and I like a company thinking outside the box here and trying a new business model, so I can't wait till it comes out and see how people react to it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, and looking forward to that little find. Next up, we have Business Week. They're mentioning that the Apple TV cost is actually at $64. The Apple TV is selling brand new for $99. If that number is near right, then essentially Apple TV margins are pretty low for Apple standards. If you compare the iPhone gross margin, that's estimated at almost a 60% profit. Anyways, I think Apple is just trying to get the units out there to people and to, you know, get them to start renting and purchasing movies through iTunes, which, I mean, it's sort of replicating the iOS model, right? You get as many iPods and iPhones into the hands of people, and the market will build itself. But, I mean, $99, I mean, man, you can buy a pair of shoes that cost more than $99. You can buy an Apple TV. I think it's going to be the seller this Christmas. I mean, it's so cheap. People can't resist. It's an impulse buy. It's an
and even the estimates, the analysts aren't predicting big things for it. I think it's going to surprise people. And if they can get these things, I think what Apple needs to do is, there's all these stories this week that I don't think we put in the lineup, but their retail channel for iPad is really expanding. All Best Buy locations are now going to carry them in the U.S. Target is going to carry them. The iPad, I think, will sell decent in those locations, but I still think most people who are going to make that investment tend to buy those things from Apple. They need to get the Apple TV everywhere. And if people can walk in this Christmas to almost any store and seeing this neat-looking box for $99 that does all this stuff, I think it is going to be a big hit. And the interesting thing about that story was the low margins. That's just not how Apple does things. My guess is it's a combination of both. They're probably making a little less on these than they're used to, but the analyst is probably a little off on the cost. But again, it shows that Apple's kind of aggressive to get these things out. And they always downplay iTunes. They always say, oh, the iTunes, we don't really make money off that. That money just kind of covers the cost of us running that. But I don't think that's the case. 30% off of every app, and then something similar to every TV show or movie rented or downloaded, that's got to start to add up. So that tells me that they want to get these things out there, and that end of the business is starting to be a moneymaker for them.
Yeah, I mean, at the same time, most of the parts in the Apple TV, they are parts that Apple, it's parts that they're already using in the iPad and the iPhone 4 and the iPod Touch 4th Gen, the A4 chip. That's, you know, something that they're already using. So easily they could just get these products on a huge scale. There's 8 gigabytes of onboard flash memory, which is, you know, pretty cheap. The unit itself, in terms of plastic and production-wise, it's really small. So, I mean, you can imagine that the costs are going to be cheap. But one thing we should mention is the Google TV / Logitech announcement from yesterday. What did you think about that? I mean, I thought it was interesting for, you know, the features that are included, but from a consumer standpoint, I found that the pricing, $299, was way too expensive, and just the interface itself, I don't know if, you know, a family is going to invest in getting the keyboard and adding another remote and doing all that stuff just to set it up. I mean, I think it's just going to be too complicated. It's going to be for more people who are already using existing streaming technologies such as Netflix and stuff that will pick it up. But at the same time, $299, that's a huge investment. That's almost more than 50% of an iPad in the USA, which sells for $499. We're looking at $299 right now.
Yeah, I think it's another almost the same as Android versus iPhone. I think it's too expensive. The interface stinks. The box is ugly. The remote is ugly. That one picture of that Sony remote that got leaked, I mean, looked like something from 1985 or something. So yeah, that end of it's terrible. I think their content partnerships kind of look impressive on paper, but when you dig deeper, most of those things are kind of available online anyways. So that's the one thing I think Google's doing a little better. They're again, kind of taking the same approach they do with Android. It's like, there's the Apple experience. It's going to be work really well and be really easy to use and great to use and sleek and all those things we love about Apple, but you're going to be limited. Here, we're going to throw you the kitchen sink again, but good luck trying to navigate it and find everything. The other interesting thing on an off topic that I don't think we said anything about in our news list there is it's now been confirmed, like you said, there's 8 gigs of storage on the Apple TV. It is running iOS. It's already been jailbroken. It already can run apps. So I think you will see apps and the Apple TV expanded. I don't think you'll necessarily see the App Store and just be downloading anything you want right away. But if Hulu or HBO or ABC, those guys all have successful iPad apps, I don't think it's going to be long till you see them announcing Apple TV apps. It only makes sense.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see what's going to be announced. I have my Apple TV ordered. It should be shipping soon, so I'll be sure to share more on the blog. Next up, we have Apple and Google. They've once again extended a deal for iOS in terms of search. They said, Google CEO Eric Schmidt said that the company's arrangement with Apple has been recently extended. So, I mean, Google makes a ton of money from being one of the search engines on iOS. It's crazy.
This story sort of flew under the the radar, but it's actually really important because it does two things. A, it allows us to finally put an end to these Bing rumors that Bing was becoming the default search and the default product for iPhone, so we can put that one to bed for now. But more importantly, the quote from Eric Schmidt there says something along the lines of basically Apple is not only a competitor, but they're an important partner. And that's the part that is important to me because I prefer the iPhone. There's no doubt about it. I don't want an Android. There's the odd thing about it that's intriguing, but I still much prefer the experience of the iPhone. But on the other hand, I love Google products. I live in Gmail. All my business domains run through Google apps. I use Google Documents. I use Google Chat as my main chat. The Google Voice hopefully will come to Canada soon. That's a great service. The Google VoIP right inside Gmail. I pretty much love all the Google services, so I'm glad to see that Google is still considering Apple a partner, so they may bake certain things into Android right away, but they haven't been leaving the Apple devices behind. So the two things can coexist, and that's what's important for me. I would, as much as I love the iPhone, I would hate to lose access to my Google products.
Yeah, I think that's one of the highlights of Android is how easy it is to just log into your Google account there. It's just the implementation is perfect. That's the one downside of owning an iPhone versus Android is having instant access to all your Google stuff. It's just so easy.
To be honest, I don't find it that big of a problem right now because, like I said, Google has moved towards giving Android the slight leg up, but every time they introduce a feature to Android, it seems within weeks it's coming to iPhone. Like the rumors are that the Google Voice app, the native one from Google, is still coming. They could easily try to hold those things back. So I'm glad to see that they're not doing that. I have Google push accounts on all my email. I actually prefer Apple's email layout to the actual Google interface, so that to me then we're getting the best of both worlds. I love the email. That's another example of I check my email and deal with my email more on my phone now than I do even my desktop. I love the new Apple Mail, but I love that it works perfectly with my Google Sync accounts. Google Docs and YouTube and all those things all are starting to work better and better all the time right on the iPhone. So, I mean, I'm just logged into my Google account on Safari and I have no trouble accessing all the different services. So it's really nice, and I'm glad to see that that partnership is still there despite some of the problems they've had because now they're competitors as well. So that's good. Mm-hmm.
All right, next up, this is an interesting story about another phone being able to have a video chat with the iPhone 4. The T-Mobile HTC Slide is going to offer non-FaceTime video chat with the iPhone 4. How are they going to do this? It's through Yahoo Messenger. So basically, the Yahoo Messenger app will provide video chatting with the iPhone 4 and other devices, but it'll let you basically use video chat with iOS and Mac OS X as well.
This is going to be big news for the next 6 months because I think FaceTime, again, took a lot of people by surprise. I'm not saying it's this runaway hit, but almost everybody I know with an iPhone 4 at least has had some use for it. But again, you're really limited by being only able to use it with other iPhone users. And Apple said they were going to open it up, and I'm not a developer, so I don't know what the status of that API is right now. But you see all these other apps trying to rush to get it to work. So if you can use it and then be able to use it with somebody with any kind of phone, I think that's great. And for the life of me, I don't understand why Apple doesn't have FaceTime built into iChat on the Mac already, but rumors are that's going to happen. So for FaceTime to fully take off, it's got to be kind of available on all the services, but they did at least prove how well it can work. I'm constantly surprised, A, how often I decide to use it. I've had several different reasons to use it, and it's worked well, and the quality has been phenomenal each time. So again, until either Apple kind of just nips these all by saying, hey, now you can use it anywhere, you're going to see everybody trying to incorporate this into their apps.
Right. Next up, we have an iPad story, a rumor of a next generation 7-inch iPad that will have the Retina display, 128 gigabytes of storage. This is a rumor. This story comes from component suppliers in Taiwan who have mentioned some of this. I mean, I don't know about the 7-inch iPad. I think it could come out. It's possible. I mean, I'm thinking of the BlackBerry Playbook and the Samsung Galaxy Tab, and I don't know. I mean, if it's too small, like a 7-inch pad, I mean, it's not big enough, you know, to be easy on the eyes. But at the same time, when you make it 7 inches, people start confusing it with their phones. So it's, especially with the Playbook, it's a widescreen 7-inch tablet. So, I mean, it will look weird surfing the web. It'll be a really, really tiny size. I mean, I guess it comes down to preferences, but I mean, if you want to do something long term, like looking at a tablet, you want to make sure the size is decent. You don't want it to be too small, because then it will be comparable to looking at your phone.
Yeah, we kind of already discussed the 7-inch aspect in that earlier story. I personally don't think it makes a lot of sense. Again, I think if something like the Playbook or the Tab or the Dell or any of these others, if they really take off, Apple's not stupid. It wouldn't take much to kind of re-engineer this thing to do a 7-inch. But I agree with you. I think the phone does most of what you want. Even, like I said, I hate to sound like a broken record, but ever since the Retina display came out, I find myself almost never saying, oh boy, I wish this was on a bigger screen. I can read really easily. Typing on it is a joy. I almost find it easier to type on the iPhone than a lot of these other things. So that aspect I don't really care about. And then if I want to go to something bigger, it's because I want to go to the iPad because I want to watch a movie and have a bigger screen. Or if I'm working on laying out a document or being more involved with pictures, the more screen real estate to do those things is what's important. So I don't think a 7-inch makes much sense, but I can tell you one thing. If next January the new iPad has more storage, a faster processor, and a Retina display and a front-facing camera, you think the sales are huge now, that thing is going to be the killer device. These other guys might as well pack up and go home, because if it has all that, that device is going to be unbeatable.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen the updates to the iPod Touch with the Retina display and the camera and all that. I mean, the Retina display it's so understated. It's not given enough credit. The phone, the display makes the phone. I hate to say it, but it's so true. If the display is beautiful, you just can't stop using the phone. It's awesome.
And it's funny because we sound like a broken record because we're working, and then I hear from people every single week, friends or even people on Twitter or whatever, saying, oh, all you talked about, or everybody was talking about it, and now I got it and I realize it. It's just, once you see it in action, it's unbelievable. I remember you and I recording, I don't remember which episode it was, but we talked about the rumors of a new display a few weeks before the announcement, and I said, I don't see the big deal. The screen on the 3GS is perfect. I don't see the big desire to go up to a better screen, and boy, was I wrong. I thought the 3GS screen was amazing, and there wasn't much need to go bigger, I mean better, and I was sure wrong. The Christmas, like the easy reading of the text alone is a huge difference maker in how you use this phone.
Yeah. Next up, we have some jailbreak news. iOS 4.1, there's going to be a jailbreak released on the 10th of October, which is on Sunday. It's going to be released at 10:10:10 at 10:10:10 a.m. GMT, which will work out to be, I think it's like 2:00 Pacific time. Anyways, basically the Chronic dev team, they're basically introducing a universal jailbreak for iOS 4.1. It's called Green Poison. If you're into the jailbreak scene, this is some news that you've been looking forward to. As for a jailbreak being released by the iPhone dev team, I think they're going to wait until 4.2 is released before releasing a jailbreak for 4.2. Sorry. Yeah, I think they're going to wait for 4.2 to be released. That way they don't need to go through this entire game again, because once people update to 4.1 in the jailbreak, they're going to lose it once they install 4.2. So if you care about any of this stuff, this is big news.
news for people who've been waiting. I'm kind of out of the jailbreak right now. I find that the phone as is kind of does everything I currently need, so I haven't been, it hasn't been a big deal for me, but I know there's a lot of people who've been waiting for 4.1 to be jailbroken, so that's good news for those of you waiting for it.
Yep, and here in Canada, we have an announcement from Rogers that they're claiming to be the first LTE technical trial in Canada. It's going to take place in Ottawa. This is where Rogers has been doing some testing with Ericsson to test the new 4G networks in Canada. But Bell has actually been mentioning that they've been doing 4G testing long before Rogers. So I don't know if this is going to lead to another PR fight or whatnot, but I think, you know, although it's pretty cool that, you know, Rogers is working on this and they're planning for the future, there are still parts of this country where people don't even have 3G yet, and they're still on Edge or GPRS. So, and right now I've noticed 3G speeds have been a bit intermittent. I don't know if the network is being bogged down, but it's definitely not as consistent as it used to be when I was using my iPhone 3G and 3GS.
I mean, it's because of the way our country's set up, it's always going to be tough. You'll probably see, unfortunately for those people, you'll probably see 4G fully implemented in Toronto before you'll see 3G in some of these other places. Unfortunately, that's just the nature of the beast. But again, it's just good news that they're constantly working on things, but it doesn't mean much now. And again, I think it's just how, where you are. The 3G, Rogers 3G, where I am, has been pretty good. It's inconsistent, but even at its worst, it's really good. So again, I don't know if it's a problem with their system or just the amount of people using it. I know last summer when I first got the 3GS and they supposedly had upgraded this area, I was sometimes able to get like 4 or 5 megabits down. And now I never kind of get more than 3, but I get a consistent 3. And 3 on a cell phone is pretty good. It streams video well. It does everything, email and web pages, like lightning. So on a day-to-day basis, I don't really have much trouble with 3G. But again, it's nice as this technology moves forward that in a few years they'll be able to offer this these new speeds.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, this is great that they're offering this. It's going to keep our carriers working hard to compete with each other. So I think in the end, it's going to be great for consumers. One more story is, I don't know how people come up with these things, but there's a new quote-unquote glass gate coming out, which talks about the iPhone 4 backs getting scratched or shattered when using particular third-party cases. Here's some help. Just don't use those cases. I mean, obviously any phone that has a glass back or is made out of glass, it's going to shatter no matter what. If you drop it or smash it, it's going to break. You just got to be careful with the device. I mean, there's nothing to it.
Yeah, I wasn't going to put that story in because I thought it was pretty flimsy on its evidence. I actually like the site it comes from. They're usually pretty good. But again, I think you'd be hearing more about this, and some of it is just common sense. And the thing that they completely missed from the story is if something about the slide-on cases does something that when you drop it, it could actually cause it to break easier, then that's something to be concerned about, and maybe that's why Apple hasn't licensed certain cases. But far as scratching it by sliding on a case, that did happen with the old design, probably more so. A lot of those plastic cases, I know people who gouged their phones pretty bad trying to slide those things on, or trying to slide them on and you had a little piece of dust or a little piece of something in there could cause that. So I don't use a case, and I have pretty much no scratches on the back of my phone. So as far as I'm concerned, the scratch element of a device that's portable and in your pocket and using it as much, it's going to happen. But I think the current design is actually far better far as scratching goes than the old device, so I don't see why this is a story.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's just interesting. More talk about, you know, some sort of negative press they can bring towards Apple. But you know what? It is a legitimate concern when you have a phone made out of glass. But let's move on to some of our iPhone apps that we want to focus on. We have some time. This one here, which we tested before the show, Tango. Tango is a free app in the App Store, and it allows for FaceTime over 3G. And it actually worked really well.
Yeah, I was really impressed. Gary and I tried it right before recording, and we were both on 3G, and the sound and video quality was excellent. You could use the front or rear camera. It was really good. So now, instead of jailbreaking, this seems like the ideal way to do video chat if you're on 3G and the app is completely free right now. So you're definitely going to want to go to the App Store and download Tango.
Right. And one tip is if you tap on the thumbnail picture, you can swap between your own looking at yourself or looking at your friend. Next up, Angry Birds updated for Game Center. Angry Birds is a challenging game.
Yeah, and the reason I think it's interesting is I'm a sucker for the Game Center achievements. I don't know what it is. I've had Angry Birds for a while, and it's a good game. I see why it's popular. It's cheap, and it's fun, and it's pretty addicting, but I wasn't that interested in it. And then as soon as it was on Game Center and you start unlocking those achievements, for some reason I get sucked into it. So I find that I'm playing much more. I still don't play it all the time. I don't do a lot of gaming on my phone. I'm not one of those people who is playing games all day on my phone. But I do find that the couple games that do have Game Center, I kind of find myself going on quickly every day to try to unlock a few more achievements. So again, if you're a big Angry Birds fan, the last update had Game Center added and some more levels and updated for the Retina display, and the icon and graphics really look good. So if you're an Angry Birds fan, you're happy to have the update. Or if you haven't to this point tried it, now's probably the time to pay the 99 cents and try it out. It's well worth it.
Yeah, it's an amazing game. And once again, the pricing strategy is right. 99 cents. You just have people buy it all the time. Next up, Netflix. This has been updated for video out and improved fast app switching. Video out for Netflix, which is great. People can buy the cable from Apple and they can stream Netflix to their large screen TVs.
Yeah, and I really like it because I mentioned actually when we initially reviewed the Netflix app, when it didn't have the fast app switching. When you would go from one screen, then have to say go over to Twitter and then come back, it wouldn't work. You'd think you're going back to the same page and then the app would reload. Now you don't have that problem if you're on a movie or on the page of a certain title. Now it goes right to it. So a small improvement, but nice. And again, I don't know about everybody else, but even though the selection isn't quite what we'd want, I'm really enjoying Netflix, and I plan to keep it after my free trial is over.
Right. This one has another update. This app is huge. Mebo. It's one of the best IM apps out there. It's completely free. It's been updated for Retina display and multitasking. I love how Mebo just is so simple, and it works great. It's fast, and it works.
Yes, and the competitors to Mebo are $10 and $15, and far as I'm concerned, don't work as good as Mebo. And this update, I don't want to say it takes care of any issues people are having because it's only been out. I've only been using it several hours. But when you go back into a chat, you're right there. There's no longer that little hesitation. I don't find that I'm ever kind of losing any replies like you sometimes had. And again, it looks really great now that they finally updated for Retina. So if you're a Mebo fan, again, you'll enjoy the update. And if you haven't tried it now, Mebo is the way to go. And they've added, I don't think there's a protocol they don't support. If a website, a social network, or an IM client exists in the world, it's probably on Mebo. So it's nice to be able to have an app that you're logged into all your accounts, so you're constantly available to people through IM. Check it out if you haven't. It's a really good app.
And this app, the Apple Remote, it's been updated a while ago for Retina display and the Apple TV. It can also control your shared libraries and AirPlay. So I think it's awesome that, you know, people can control their Apple TV using an app from the App Store. You don't need to go buy another remote.
Yeah, the Apple Remote has always been good, but this latest update is phenomenal. The only thing that has me thinking, I like the app so much now that I wish they'd just take the plunge and add the ability to actually stream that content right to your phone if you wanted. It'd be nice to just be able to click one button, and then instead of using the remote to play a song on your computer, you could just actually have it stream from your computer to your phone. And there's lots of apps that do that, so you know it's easy enough to do. I just wonder if it's a licensing thing with the way Apple currently has deals with people that they haven't done that, because it seems like it would be a pretty easy feature for them to add, and I'd love to see that. Then it would be killer.
Right on. That's about it for our overview of apps. Once again, I'd like to say thank you to everyone for listening to the podcast. Episode 16 was brought to you by Blue Microphones. Before we end off, I'd like to tell everyone about a free iPad giveaway that's happening on iPhoneinCanada.ca and iPadinCanada.ca. It's thanks to our friends from Zag. All you have to do is submit your email, and Zag is going to choose one winner from the readers of the two sites. So I think it's great that we're working together. And if you're looking to win an iPad, check out the site to do that. Once again, you can contact me at twitter.com/iPhoneinCanada. Justin?
Yep, and I'm twitter.com/JustinLouis. The last name is Louey. And if you actually search that username, that's my name on most things. So if you want to add me on Game Center or anything else, that's where you can find me. And my email is justin@theiphonepodcast.com. If you have any more input, every week I tend to get a couple suggestions or a couple questions, and I enjoy that feedback. So keep letting us know what you want, and we're going to keep growing this thing. The downloads have been great. The comments, the reviews, if you're enjoying the show, or even if you're not, give us a review. Give us your honest opinion on what you want to see from us, and we're going to keep working to make this better. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and I appreciate it.
Thank you again for listening to the iPhone podcast. Please rate us in iTunes, and we'll catch you again on episode 17. Thank you.